on Now's the Time as Vince Jones. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Frank.
You and your band, you've been touring the European circuit, playing to packed houses in Germany, London, Switzerland, Denmark and the Netherlands, including major festivals at the North Sea, Montreux and Aarhus. Do you notice any discernible differences in European audiences compared to Australian audiences, Vince?
Well, they're brought up on a diet of more jazz-orientated music, so they're a lot easier to please. It's easier to get their interest. Yes, it's very popular in Europe, jazz, you know. And they get that, of course, they get those fantastic festivals like Montreux and North Sea and extraordinary jazz festivals every year. So it's a great opportunity for a jazz artist from Australia, from anywhere around the world, to go to Europe and play these festivals.
The Stonington Jazz Festival in Melbourne this year celebrated your career, longevity and talent as one of Australia's finest jazz vocalists, with a two-concert reunion, in fact, with some past members, including Paul Grabowski, Joe Kindamo, Doug DeVries, Wilbur Wilde, Dale Barlow, and probably a few more on top of that. How do you feel about entering the tribute stage of your career?
Well, to me, it usually means I haven't got a new record out, and I better get cracking.
Well, do you have something in the pipeline?
I do, yeah. I'm back. I sort of always working on ideas. It's not so much I have a record about to come out or anything, but I'm working on songs. And we do them live first for a little while, so they find their footing, and then that's the song that is. And then we record it, or it tends to morph into something else during performances. But yeah, I've got some stuff that I'd like to release. It's been good to not release for a while. I was getting possibly a little too prolific there, and people were getting swamped in my stuff. But I'm starting to spend a couple of years between each record, which is nice.
I'm moving through Taboos. Is that your latest one?
It is, yeah. That would be still 2 or 3 years old now, that one.
Vince, in 2001, I visited an Italian town called Ferrara, near Modena, where they make the famous Ferraris.
Mm-hmm.
And on the recommendation of a guidebook, I dined at a restaurant which indicated the diner might hear the chef playing trumpet. Well, I didn't get to hear the trumpet, but I did get to talking with the chef that night, and without him knowing where I was from, I asked him who his favourite trumpet players were. And he replied in this order: Miles Davis, Chet Baker and Vince Jones. Have you ever considered that perhaps you've underestimated your impact on the instrument?
I never took it seriously. I have an inherent desire of whatever instrument, whatever I do, to make it beautiful as I can, you know. Beautiful's not really the right word, but as much beauty as I can inject into it. But I never took the trumpet. It wasn't my first instrument. So harmonically, I was a little bit shy. And if I had studied it, if I hadn't sang, it would have been my featured instrument. And yeah, I would have, because I had a beautiful sound, and everyone would tell me, the American trumpet players would say to me, you know, great players would say, oh, your sound is so beautiful, delicious, you know, they would say. But my harmonic insight to the instrument, I really needed to study harder, a lot harder than I had. But as a singer, I have studied, and I'm really quite, the work I should have done on trumpet, I did on vocals, you know.
Do you feel as though you're not playing trumpet as much in your performances these days as what you were, say, 10 years ago?
Well, I'm not practicing as much as I was. It's a bugger of an instrument. If you don't practice it every day, like religiously, you just start to sound funny, flat.
Just lose your chops.
Yeah, well, and strength-wise, you lose so much. But because it's a fairly big slice of bite of the apple to be a singer and a songwriter and a lyricist and also to be a trumpet player, and it's a fair bit to choose, so something had to slowly drop off a bit, you know. Sadly, it was a trumpet. But I'm still, tonight, as soon as I finish talking to you, I'm going to have a blow for an hour.
Good on you.
Listen to some music and have a play.
You choose to live down on the south coast of New South Wales and obviously have an affinity to the Australian bush and, of course, the conservation of the environment, which is evident in some of your lyrics. Can you describe some of the aspects of your home environment that have recently influenced your songwriting?
Well, I have lived in very remote areas, and I had an old aeroplane I used to fly in to buy a big piece of sort of bush or a little bit of farmland, and I'd sort of mow out a strip with an old tractor I had, which of all things ran on veggie oil. And I used to go up and down and make a little strip. But I got over that, and the remote sort of forest kind of places. Now I live in a little coastal village with a few people in the township, and But with every place I go to, the first thing I do is start up an orchard. I put 20, 50, maybe 100 fruit trees in and veggie garden, and I get some chickens and ducks and get them to keep my garden clean. I've got a greenhouse. I always have a greenhouse. I like growing my own food and eating it, collecting my own water. I collect the sunlight. I use solar electricity and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Love to make a record, solar power. That's my next objective, I think.
I've been an admirer of your music ever since I bought the vinyl album Tell Me a Secret. How has the jazz scene changed since when you started out in the late 70s and early recording in the early 80s?
Well, I fell into the label of jazz. I just thought I was doing what I do, you know. I never thought I was a jazz singer, particularly in Oz. There's just not enough jazz listeners, so I kind of liked singing standards.
You were influenced by the boppers, though, weren't you?
Oh, very much influenced, but I kind of made records with sort of half original. I tried not to use any effects, which makes the music sound really earthy, organic. So I never got dated by all those effects that everyone was using, the various synths and the syndrums and all that stuff. But it has changed quite considerably. I was probably seen as quite commercial when I was recording. In fact, I think For All Colours sold a lot of records. It should have gone gold. And some of my records did really well, in fact, you know.
Yes,
well, that gold record has done extremely well. That should probably be a gold record. But I don't know that we never actually played bebop or anything full-on jazz. It was mainly a folk jazz, a little bit of funk, not much funk, but it was like a... I tried to make Australian music. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to make an Australian jazz sound. But as I say to you, I was probably the only guy around doing that as a singer in Australia. There'd probably only be two commercial jazz artists in the 70s. In fact, during the 70s, probably only one. It was me. James Morrison came along a bit later than me. He's quite a bit younger than me. And he came on the scene, and then he made some really groundbreaking sort of... moves and alerted people to the fact that we had a few great jazz instrumentalists in this country. John Burroughs, of course, had made all those wonderful records much earlier than me, during the 60s, in fact.
Last year, I proposed the following question to long-term guitarist Aaron Flower, your long-term guitarist.
Yeah.
I said to him, is it possible these days to become a household name or become significantly influential on people but still remain true to your own creative art form? And his reply was, Vince Jones has done it. He's very famous, but he's still playing very creative music.
Good.
Now, myself, I recall seeing your videos on shows like Rage on television, you know, in the 1980s, and thinking to myself at the time, how could that be? How do you think you've been able to succeed in both the artistic and commercial realities?
Well, I'm a good singer, and I always surround myself with really good players, so they made me sound extra good. And our records were kind of fresh sounding because they weren't... I try not to let the music become affected by fashion or time. That way the record will then endure time, you know? But it was strange. I was young and, you know, record companies liked the sound. They thought... For a minute there, I thought record companies were going to put a lot of money into jazz, you know, but they didn't. Australian record companies pulled back away from jazz, Australian jazz at least, in fact, all jazz now. But, it was a funny time, wasn't it? I remember recording the Mose Allison song, Don't Worry About a Thing, and it was getting airplay on Rage, as you say.
Yeah, it was
and then,
late 80s,
Lobster.
I think.
We did Lobster, and there's quite a few CDs we did, videos we did, actually. I got sick of videos. I thought, nope, that's it, that's the end of it, I'm not doing any more. Woke up one morning and decided I'm not doing any more of these, because it certainly didn't help record sales.
We let them do it. Vince, tell us a little bit about the inspiration for this one.
It was written in support of Ken Sarawiwi, the Nigerian poet who murdered, actually, by the secret police, I believe, in Nigeria. And it was inspired by him. Most of the songs that I write are secretly inspired by the efforts of others. And, of course, it was about the West, in a sense, turning a blind eye to his wonderful efforts.
Vince Jones, thanks very much for joining me. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
It's been pleasure on my part too. Thanks, Frank.